The first mindset shift is the owner going from the person that is involved in everything to realizing that you have to build the team around you that can do things the way that you have been doing them, and maybe even better, hopefully. There is a limiting belief a lot of times that the owner needs to be doing the work for the work to be done correctly. And I think if you think you can do everything yourself or you can do it better, that is the wrong attitude. You need to find the people who can actually do it better and teach them your ways and let them expand on it.
You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. Happy to be here.
We are stoked to have you. You are the co-founder of Trainual, a piece of software that I think a lot of us in the industry have heard of. And I look forward to this conversation. I know when we originally planned, I want to talk all things SOPs. We'll maybe touch on that a little bit, but I think you're a unique brain. I think you're a smart human, and I would just love to understand you and what you do in business and what you do in life and how you bring those two things together. So we'll weave in between a few things, if that's cool with you.
I would love to understand me as well, but I haven't yet figured it out. But yeah, let's dig in.
That's awesome, dude. No, I think you're an Uber entrepreneur is the way I would label you. So I think you've got an awesome life and you've created some cool stuff in life. So, but yeah, let's start with Trainual. I mean, the idea itself, how did that come to be? I mean, it's you and your partner that created this thing from nothing, from the ether. So what inspired this whole piece of software to even come to life?
Yeah. So my co-founder is my brother. So we have just grown up doing all sorts of business ventures together. And one of those was a event video production company through high school and college that focused on like amateur sporting events. So like cheerleading and figure skating and dance and, you know, synchro swimming, all that kind of stuff, right? Like we filmed the videos and sold it to the competitors, their parents, the coaches, etc. In building that up, we you know, over the course of a decade became the nation's largest event video provider. And through that journey, it went from like, you know, Chris and I being on site at some like local Massachusetts cheerleading competition doing everything to then there being like three events happening in three different states at the same time. And it just necessitated figuring out how do we scale this company and systemize this brand and this experience of how we deliver the same product to our customers. And so we built the muscle through that period of systems and processes and efficient onboarding and training for all the camera operators we needed, the production managers, the salespeople, et cetera. And we had, you know, something like 300 contractors around the country that we would bring up to speed. And at the time it was like WooFoo survey forms and WordPress training sites and things like that. And we'd send out all these production kits with all the checklists that everybody needed to show up on site and run it as if we were there. And so that's where we kind of like had the backbone, the DNA of what would eventually become Trainual. When we exited that business in 2012, Chris, always the systems process operations guy, that was more where he was, built. He started an operations consulting company and was serving a lot of clients. He lived in Arizona, still does, but he had moved out there and was helping a lot of small businesses with those same problems, like figuring out how to scale their own teams and build SOPs and productize what they were doing and find what's actually scalable in their business and focus on it. And so it was a passion of his. And so Chris actually in late 2014 had built a beta product of Trainual just to help with onboarding and SOPs. And it just lived inside of his consulting company for a few years with just his clients using it. Meanwhile, I was building an adventure media agency and leaning into my side of what I loved, which was media and storytelling and adventure travel, and working with tons of different brands in the outdoor industry to tell their brand stories via social or via film. And then it was in the middle or towards the end of 2017 that we linked back up because Chris was looking to kind of take the step from his consulting company into maybe seeing what this software could do outside of just his clients, thinking that that was the more scalable thing for a way to affect more businesses than just his time, as a lot of people probably know that are in the consulting space. And so so we teamed back up and I helped him kind of write the brand stories and build the website and do all the original content and build out the marketing systems, and not with the intent to be a long-term, you know, partner in this business, but just to help get this thing off the ground and go back to my life of climbing mountains. But actually the first time I even tested the product was when I left my agency to go and climb Denali, and I was on the glacier just totally off the grid for 3 weeks and needed the, you know, people back home to be delivering the work that needed to be done for clients and keep the podcasts and the newsletters and the content going and all of that. And that was when, you know, me notoriously not having a lot of the delegation skill that Chris had, because I was the little brother and he delegated everything to me through all of the years. I more prided myself in being the person who could take anything on and figure it out and do it all myself. It became the unlock, and I realized what the story was to tell and how this could impact so many entrepreneurs and help them get their time back and help them create more scalable businesses, and rolled that into the ethos of everything that we did at the start of Trainual to get that story out there. And there was just a magic to us collaborating again and being back in business together. And the momentum just built from there. And through doing basically everything that I was, you know, I didn't shut off any valve. I kept it all going for about a year and a half until realizing that I needed to double down on what was working the most and where I was actually enjoying my time the most. And funny enough, it wasn't the adventure stuff. That's still where my passion lies. But, there's a danger in making your passion your professional life. And I was realizing that. And yet at the same time, there was an excitement to taking everything that I had done in that space and applying it to an industry I knew nothing about, and that every other competitor or even adjacent tool in the industry wasn't doing anything like what I had, you know, in my toolkit.
What is that? Because when you think about SOPs, you could just think about a bunch of Word documents and PDFs and Excel files, and they all exist maybe in Google Drive right now. Like that is the simplest version of it, right? What is the magic that Trainual brings to the industry in general that otherwise would not really exist? Like, what's happening that's causing this to be such a valuable piece of software for so many entrepreneurs across literally North America, if not further?
I think it starts with how we meet people where they're at with the brand story and the human story, right? Like, that's what was different. I remember in 2018, when we were first getting the software off the ground, going and walking the floor at the ATD conference, which is like all these LMSs and tons of other HR tech, and just looking at every single booth that looked the same. That's just, you know, this white background with this text and the product, and
boring.
It's like you've been to trade show floors that are just like wildly unentertaining and boring, and like there was nobody doing anything that was human centric, and that was the world that I was in. Everything in the documentary storytelling, you know, landscape of the outdoor industry is rooted in the rawness of nature and the people and the pursuits, when they're out there in the mountains, on the trails, et cetera. And so, that set it apart from the beginning in just the way that we presented the product. Was not by presenting the product. It was by presenting the value prop of the product and the actual story of the humans that it affected and the entrepreneurs whose lives that it changed by, you know, getting that unlock for their business. And there's a lot of successful businesses out there that are not doing SOPs, and that are not, like, you can get to a certain level of scale without doing documentation, without systems and processes, but like to really systemize, to kind of explode growth and build a really solid, you know, foundation for your team, there's an investment that needs to be made. And so that was like from the brand and story standpoint. And from a product standpoint, there was also, you know, in 2018 and for the next few years, there was nothing that really was in that middle zone of combining a wiki and an LMS, right? You had learning management systems for the enterprise, and you had Google Docs, where everybody was basically starting, and there was nothing in the middle. And that was our sweet spot. And it's funny, we kind of were ahead of the curve, because now there's so much convergence of, you know, experience, like employee experience platforms and things from the enterprise that are growing into the SMB, and tons of other tools popping up that are solving all these niche problems when people are graduating out of Google Docs. But no, we captured a sweet spot in the market before the trend was there.
And you work with a lot of contractors. Actually, I remember looking, and I guess the majority, or if you were to say your largest customer base, is the contracting and service, customer service space, I guess, or who's using this right now?
Yeah. I mean, not by intention per se, actually. We started it just as a very agnostic product across industries. And you know, had the aspiration to be the mega corporation that could be, you know, serve everybody, right? Everybody's hiring and training and needs this. But yeah, through the years, we resonated with certain industries more than others, and contracting and roofing and plumbing and HVAC and home services and, all of that became one of our top three verticals that, you know, just at a point in time, I think that they're also going through an incredible period right now of growth and of maybe legacy way that business was done that is now adopting new digital tools and thinking more about what goes into the back office, versus just the field training. And so it's grown incredibly.
When we were doing prep, I asked you about, you know, because I work with a ton of contractors as well, and I see them every day in the field, and I see them, a bunch of people who are overworked, they're super busy, they all need systems, they're all trying to do it, but very few actually step up and do this well. What does it take to properly document an organization to the level of actually having real freedom from the day-to-day, actually seeing things go on without you being involved at all? What, let's even start the mind shift of the owner. Like, what has to happen from an owner's perspective to get this level of documentation in place to create real freedom for an entrepreneur?
There's a couple shifts along the way. The first mindset shift is the owner going from the person that is involved in everything to realizing that you have to build the team around you that can do things the way that you have been doing them, and maybe even better, hopefully. You know, I think we see in the trades, there's a lot of people that, like, they, you know, talk to you and be like, well, why aren't you doing double the garage door business? And they're like, well, cause you know, I only have two technicians. It's like, well, you could just throw a Google ad on there and you could, you know, get build up your demand to the point where you need three more technicians and then you're not going to every door. But there is a limiting belief a lot of times that the owner needs to be doing the work for the work to be done correctly. And I think if you think you can do everything yourself or you can do it better, that is the wrong attitude. You need to find the people who can actually do it better and teach them your ways and let them expand on it. So that's the first shift. And then the second, as you build up the team, it's about creating a culture of documentation, right? Like you have to not just you take on, like, I'm going to build out everything and roll it out and they'll just look at this. No, you want everybody contributing to your company playbook. And you know, there comes a point where you're just not involved in everything, but you need to ensure that you have some change management protection, right? Some insurance of knowledge in your business that if Jane, who did accounting, who was there for 6 years, all of a sudden leaves, or, you know, something happens, that you're not sucked into something that you don't know how to do, or that the next person doesn't have to just figure it out from scratch, right? It's about creating longevity in your business. And when you realize that, then you realize it takes an investment in time and in resources and priorities to actually set up the time saving on the back end.
I asked you in prep, I said, what is the biggest magic wand you could just wish upon your users as they come in and start to use your platform? And you said, we need to fix what you call the aspirational procrastinators. Cause I think what you just described is what everybody listening is like, yeah, totally. Yeah, we need to do that. We need to do that. There are those who do, and there are those who don't. Any just words of advice for those, what you would call the aspirational procrastinator?
Yes. So I often think about this, like, when you have a sink full of dishes, sometimes there's not urgency to do it until you're about to sit down for dinner and you open the utensil drawer and you have no more forks, right? And then all of a sudden you're like, oh damn, I gotta clean some dishes so that I can eat my meal, right? And that's often what happens in a business, is it doesn't feel like the most urgent problem until you wish you did it yesterday. And so there's just a necessary, you know, conscious investment that you need to make in proactively doing something that's going to benefit you tomorrow. A lot of people will work with their coach and they'll hear, oh, you need systems and processes and you got to document your business and you got to build out training systems in order to get out of the, you know, being the bottleneck in your business. And they'll read a book and they'll go to a EOS conference or something and they'll hear about all these frameworks and they'll only apply the thing that's convenient to what they're doing. And they'll know that they should do something else at some point, but
they don't have time. They don't have the mental discipline.
Exactly. And so, and like sitting down to document the way that work is done in your organization is not the most sexy thing. It's not what anybody wants to do. It feels like homework, and it's not the thing that's going to make sure that you make payroll on Monday. But there is a broader lens that you need to take on the, you know, the long-term business that you want to build. And then you have to set that as a strategic priority for your organization and ensure that your leaders know it. And you have accountability check-ins, and that's what it takes to truly build it out, instead of just assigning it to your, you know, executive admin and saying, hey, explore this and let me know what you think and figure it out and cool, let's buy it. And then 3 months go by and you didn't do anything because it was never an urgent or important initiative in your mind.
You know what I find too, like every day as an entrepreneur, and you probably have this too, you have decisions to make about how you spend your time, about how you spend your money, about who you hire, about how what you do with the people that you've hired. And there's always a conflicting decision matrix between what is best for right now and what is best for the future. And it's being able to side with the future more often than not, because often what is best right now is the tempting thing to get done, because that's the thing that's going to make money. That's the thing that's going to solve that problem you're dealing with. That's what's going to get, you know, the ball across the line for the week or for the month. But it's being disciplined enough to being actually the harder choice is to do what's better for the future. And that's actually the one that sucks. And it's actually a bit more risk, and it actually might make us less money right now. And it's the ability to see that. I think we all see the choices in front of us all the time. It's just being like, no, I'm actually going to do what's best long term. And like always choose that.
But that's a big transition for an entrepreneur. You have to hit that stage at some point, right? Like in the earliest stages of your business, it's okay to focus on what's important short term and what's going to actually, like, you know, get the next sale, and what do we have to do in marketing, and our customers are mad and we need to respond to that right yeah. now. Like, it's okay to be in the mix on that when you're very small. But as you mature your business, you as the entrepreneur, or you as an executive leadership team, need to be thinking long term. And if you're not, then that's the wrong attitude for your business.
I found it during COVID quite a bit, because COVID shut everything down and everybody's panicking. And there were those who were just grinding. This is like the March, April time when like things were really kind of uncertain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Things opened up after that. But during those 2 months, it was kind of like, what do we do? And there was those who were just like, let's try and get work and let's try and keep the production line going. And there were those who were like, it's fine. We're going to sit back and we're going to use this time and we're going to build towards the future. And there was just like a calmness about it. And I saw that I watched that shift happen for some owners that were just all about trying to get sales and marketing and get production going regardless. And those who are like, that's fine, we're not going to fight that fight, but there's some time now to work on the future.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, for sure. It was an unfortunate time to actually renovate the barn that I told you I'm in right now, because lumber prices were through the roof in COVID, but that's when we did it.
Right. That is not so much the case anymore. There's another thing I see with owners, which is, you know, the fear of destroying creativity and freedom in the business for structure and systems, right? And I don't know if I described it to you on the prep call, but like the whole office space, you know, scenario of like the two Bobs coming in and just like structuring the company and taking the life out of it. Yeah. How do you balance keeping creativity and freedom? Because I feel like you do a really good job of that, even in your business, while bringing structure and systems. And how do you tie those two together?
Yeah, it depends. Like, it comes down to the degree of which you document, right? And like, coming from somebody who's selling a product for documenting your business and scaling knowledge and stuff, I don't believe everything in the business needs to be systemized and needs to be documented, right? And you have to understand what does and what doesn't, what's going to have the highest ROI and the most amount of people. And if you're onboarding, you know, new people in the field or in the office, and you know that over and over, I have to sit down and explain, here's our company story, here's who we serve, here's, you know, how we work with customers, et cetera, et cetera. Like, there are certain things that you just like, you have to tell people over and over and over. Start there. That's the most scalable stuff, right? What does everyone need to know about your company? When people over index and they get into the minutiae of like, this is exactly how we set up a Facebook ad and how and a Google ad and what we do to respond to these comments on our like Google business, you know, profile, all of that changes all the time. It's outside of your control. The algorithms change, the strategies change, the creative formats change, and you're just creating work for yourself. So it's like you can create and document philosophies and strategies and pieces of the systems that you use, but you have to leave room for innovation.
Right. So it's just not to go too deep on things that are constantly needing to be reiterated on, but to be able to let the way of thinking or the way of approaching an issue to be documented so that people can find that solution regardless of change.
Correct.
Okay. As we were chatting before too, you are an adventure nut, and it seems to have shaped the way that you are a leader actually as an entrepreneur, and the way you lead Trainual even in your organization. Can you just give us some of the principles that you've brought into business based on your adventure experiences and how you go out and do what you do every day?
Yeah. So I think everybody should push themselves physically in some sort of way, whether that's a 5K or a half marathon or a Spartan race or something. Go out and do something that is going to test your physical limits, because when you go into your day to day, everything else becomes easier in the business decisions that you have to make. And so, you know, in my case, it was a little more extreme. I through my 20s, pursued high altitude mountaineering and was on all sorts of crazy mountains, you know, at 20,000 feet and whiteouts and leading teams across crevasse fields on expeditions. And there was a level of resilience that you need to actually like develop when you're in those kinds of environments that are totally outside your control, right? It's not up to me if the winds pick up to 100 miles an hour, but I have to be able to pivot and know how to deal with that. You learn decision-making principles on the fly really fast. You learn resilience, you learn grit, you learn endurance, and you learn stakes, right? So like when you're making a life or death decision in the mountains, and then you're in a meeting where you're trying to decide on like the next, you know, sales campaign, it is way easier to figure out what the sales campaign is going to be and what, and if it works or not, what, you know, you figure that out along the way. But I think those lessons carry over. And so like even one example, I had been climbing with these two guys for, you know, a decade, and we were just lockstep. We knew what each other would do. We knew where we fit. We knew the roles on the team. And then we went to a mountain where we had an extra permit, and one of our other buddies was really getting into the sport. And so we brought him along. But me leading the expedition, I, you know, was not a good leader in that I didn't explain like his role on the rope team, right? And so like we're sitting at 12,000 feet having like these emotional debates and arguments because of the, you know, what we had just passed through, which was like trying to go up a 50 degree slope over a crevasse where there was avalanche danger, and it had just started snowing and we saw cracks come around us, and it was like this crazy experience, and he was freaking out and making some of the wrong calls without realizing like what the, you know, order of operations and who does what would be in that scenario. And that translates to everything I do with my team and business today, is that like, it is so important for everybody to know their roles and responsibilities and have clarity on how they fit in the team and what to do in certain situations and who to go to in what context for what. And I think about that, that event all the time.
You lead a lot of the marketing over at Trainual, do you not?
Yeah.
This is like, when we think about Trainual and what we've seen over the years, a lot of that was you basically figuring out all these kind of cool, crazy campaigns. How do you bring that level of creativity to the table when you're also super data driven and you're also trying to hit metrics and targets? And how do you instill that into your organization?
Yeah. So I ask my team to tell me what's on their bucket list, and then to pitch a concept that would work for Trainual, that would move our product, right? And I'll get back to that. But where I learned it was really in an internship with Old Spice in 2010. They sent me out to Switzerland to go and promote a new line of deodorant, the Old Spice Matterhorn. And so while I was in Zermatt, I was snowboarding and in a helicopter and paragliding and doing all these crazy things just to like do stunts for social media for this new line of deodorant. And that's when it clicked to me that I could combine all the things that I love and want to do in life, as long as I understand the business objectives and the brand objectives behind, you know, something and how to tie those two together. And then also be familiar with the mechanisms of, you know, the marketing channels and distributions and everything that like would connect the two. And I've always believed that creativity exists in the space between unconnected ideas. You have two random things. How do you make those go together? And that's what true creativity is. And so coming into Trainual, I honestly just looked at my bucket list. And through the years, I've like seen all these different items that I wanted to do, whether it was, you know, collaborate with a music icon. You see all the music stuff behind me. I thought it would probably be like, you know, having Travis Barker drum on one of my tracks one day, but it ended up being Montel Jordan, R&B legend. And that was because we were selling SOPs, trying to teach people, this is how you do things, right? And so Montel has, this is how we do it. And we reached out to him and I pitched him on co-writing a remix to take his like iconic hook and bring it into something that was more of an entrepreneurial anthem that could be a backtrack of our campaigns. And so the creative idea was rooted in something that I just wanted to do in my life, but that I found the thread that would work for the Trainual product. And then outside of actually creating the thing, the song, the music video, then it became, well, how do we now use this asset to our benefit to drive the accounts that we want, to drive the event attendance that we want? And that just comes down to the you know, typical tactics of sales and marketing and where you distribute the thing and how you measure it.
Something important you just said is like you're willing to do the things that you have fun with, the things you're personally interested in, and just go and be like, this is what I want. How it connects to the initiative, I'm not sure yet, but once I get that going, I will figure that piece out. And then that's where the creative process is versus saying, I don't know, like if what my personal interests are matter or not, I'm trying to get leads and just focusing on the leads. You're just saying, I think this would be super sick to do. And I also need to figure this out for like getting an ROI. I'll creatively think through that, but I'm confident to start with what I love first. Is that what we were saying?
Yeah, 100%. Like doing an Ironman was on the list too. And so after realizing that like Ironman has thousands of volunteers at every single race that are like out there, you know, helping people with their water stations and they're doing cleanup and they're doing all that. They have an infrastructure that needed support. And so realizing that there was a need there, we approached Ironman about a partnership and they ended up using Trainual to train and onboard all of their volunteers and across the organization as they came back from COVID, you know, went back to racing. And we got to be the title sponsor of a race in Palm Springs. And so I ended up being able to do an Ironman like with Trainual's logo all over it and have a medal that has Trainual's logo on it, which checked off an item on my bucket list, which served a business objective, which gave us an amazing case study. So yes, that is the blueprint for how some of the biggest campaigns that we've done have come to life.
It's good, man. Even when I was prepping with you, like the theme that you and your brother seem to have is you guys are still having a lot of fun. How do you maintain that? How do you, because I think as business grows, as things get more serious, as private equity gets involved, people start to take the fun out of things. How do you make sure as you grow your business, even at the size you guys are now, that's still fun?
It takes it being more than you. Right. So like if, you know, for me, it's my brother and I, and we'll put something on the calendar. We'll sign up for a race or we'll plan a mountain or a trek or something like that, where we know that that's going to be a unique time for the two of us out of our normal day-to-day meetings with everybody, out of the leadership sessions, out of the board meetings, et cetera, where we can just talk business and strategy the entire time. And it becomes in essence, a business retreat while doing something we love. And so there is a necessity to have that on the calendar. We initially did it every single quarter. Now it's a little more like once or twice a year, but it needs to still happen. And so that is a foundation to it. And, you know, if it was just me, it would be a little more difficult. And so I think you need to surround yourself with the right people as you build your team who can vibe with you with that way and be, you know, accountability buddies to actually still go out and have fun. I think like when I'm interviewing and I'm looking for who we want to join the team, as much as I'm looking at their capabilities and their skill sets and their experience, I also at the end of the day just want somebody on the team who I want to go to a concert with or sit down and have a beer with, or know that if we're at an event and we're in, you know, Mexico at a trade show for 3 days, like we're going to have a good time together.
I think as business grows, there's a lot, it's I've seen a lot of people who don't do that. And they pull away. And I would even put my hand up along the way. There's been times where I'm just like, this isn't fun anymore. And then the creativity dies. And then when the creativity dies, the initiatives get less fun. And it's just kind of like a cascading effect. When I prepped with you, I thought that was like a very just small but insightful thought, which is like, do not let the fun die in your organization. And if it is, you need to go back to the basics. And actually, it sounds like you guys just take a lot of risks and just are like, doing what you love and then integrating it into business and being willing to do that actually when the world can sometimes just take things too seriously. And I think when you do that, you lose some of that gusto that makes you unique. So
it's also how you differentiate your brand, right? Like you, every other contractor out there or every other business out there could do the exact same things, could serve the same audience. You're competing with all these other people in a market. And yeah, we can renovate a kitchen or we can build a commercial property. We can do your dental checkup, right? Like whatever it is, like there's so many people that just do the same thing. And if you don't have that attitude, then you're not differentiating your brand. How do you do something different? How do you be bold and stand out in the market? Why did freaking the Boring Company launch a flamethrower? That makes no sense, right? Like they're a tunneling company, but they came out with a flamethrower and they got tons of PR from it. And it's just a fun thing that is exemplary of what the brand is and who they are. And that's how they create relationships with their, you know, partners and customers.
It's actually called Not a Flamethrower, Jonathan.
Not a Flamethrower. That's right.
That's good.
Which we actually used in an ad. We got one in the, like the first or second year of the business. And we took like all these old binders and the manuals that everybody would, you know, the paper employee handbooks and stuff. And we just used the not a Flamethrower Boring Company thing to burn it all. And as a Instagram ad, it worked really well.
This is great. This is good. I'm going to hop subjects a bit on you. I'm going to get into AI a little bit because I feel like you've created a product pre the age of AI. It is now coming to be a part of who we are. It's probably massively influential to the creation of SOPs and the documentation. I'm curious to just know, like, what is your perspective on how Trainual and what is your plan for Trainual to be adjusting to this, using this, and given this new tool, this awesome opportunity. Like, how do you see Trainual coming out in the next 3 to 5 years? And what's the path that you guys are taking all this?
Yeah. The quickest thing that AI commoditized in, you know, the landscape that we play in is basically the wiki, the knowledge base, right? It's like you can now just ask your, you know, Google Drive or whatever you have, Notion, et cetera. Like even in Trainual, you can just like type in like, what is this? And it'll just like conversational interface tell you about the thing instead of having to like build it out now. So that's one thing that changed for sure. But what it is not touching is the organization of who does what and how change is facilitated in your company, right? Who does what as far as roles and responsibilities is not something that, like, I can ask AI about your business, but it's not going to give me the in-depth look of every person under the hood and all the things that they do on a day-to-day. And that's what Trainual is built to actually, you know, unpack and systemize and organize so that you have a scalable infrastructure of the legacy of knowledge in your business and the future of where that knowledge is going. Outside of that, yeah, I mean, AI makes it super easy to write processes now. You can give it the prompts. You can tell, you know, we use this machine and we give it like the few steps and then it'll write out a nice SOP. Totally. But it also, it's not going to give you the video about your founding story
yet,
per se.
Yet. I'm playing with Sora 2. Yet. It's probably a year away. It's coming, but yeah.
Yeah. Now there's a lot of things that AI is making incredible about the employee journey, right? But it goes back to even what I was saying about the, like, what made Trainual stand out at the start on the brand side. It was the human nature of what's at the core of the business and what are the stories in the business. And so while AI can start to make easier or even commoditize the how the work is done, it doesn't necessarily capture the purpose, the why, and catalog the changes and systemize the way that you can scale it.
Yeah, you have a strong mind for marketing, and I can tell for a lot of reasons why you've done that. But like, it's a unique take. It's a creative take. Is there anything else just when it comes to entrepreneurs, contractors that are out there right now that you would just, I don't know, the advice you would give them around their marketing strategy, around the way they think about marketing versus how you guys have seen it and just what you've learned over the years of building Trainual the way you have?
I mean, we talked a bit about just like diving deep into your personal nature of what makes you, mm-hmm. right? Like I was talking about the garage door example earlier. That's because it was fresh in my mind. One of my high school friends inherited a garage door company from his father and is now taking it over, trying to run it. And I was talking to him and he is also really passionate about making jerky and smoking meats and doing all that. And like, so I was like, well, let's go on a little deep dive here about how do you combine those two? How do you become the guy on TikTok, you know, that is marketing to the New England region that is serving customers and figuring out how to speak the language of what they need for their garage door, but also you're doing it in a way that you're smoking meats. And it's like, that's a random thing. And we didn't get to a perfect solution on that one, but like figure out what makes you and your business different than the rest. That's one. And another is really study the, you know, where the attention is, right? Like there's a lot of contractors and a lot of people in the trade and home services that are on all of these platforms. Like everybody is on their phone all the time, every single day, right? And so like, just talk to your clients and ask like, what social media apps do you use? Is it Facebook? Is it Instagram? Is it LinkedIn? Is it YouTube? Like, where are they? You got to find where the attention is and understand how to play into that attention graph, because that's the way that you get in front of them. And doing a little bit of a deep dive and getting up to speed on what they're consuming will allow you to start to stand out. Like at the start of Trainual, we knew that people that we were trying to sell to watched Shark Tank and like the Prophet and followed, you know, Marcus Lemonis and Mark Cuban and Gary Vee. And then outside of just business content, we found that there was a huge amount of people in our customer base that actually were obsessed with The Office. And so along the way, like we ended up partnering with Damon John from Shark Tank. We did a whole content thing with Gary Vee, and we did a commercial with three of the actors from The Office, and were able to meet our audience where they were because we did the research to understand what their attention graph and psychology looked like.
Cool. Yeah. It's this combination of be willing to just show the world what you're actually interested in, but find a way that it makes sense for your organization. Be a bit more bold than I think a lot of people would be willing to be. And then have a very clear understanding of where your customer is and hangs out, and actually, again, to the bold nature, like go after it, even if it's a big idea. You guys have done a lot of cool big ideas that I think a lot of people just talk about and never go do. So it's good. Well, you've been at this for 10 years. Is there anything, like you look back at your younger self, any like just wisdom you would give to your old entrepreneur self when you first started all this? That you've learned over the last while?
Buckle up. No, I think the thing that I've learned the most along the way is how much I have to learn along the way. And I think that you can't get complacent, and you have to continuously have an appetite for learning and for being curious and for investing in yourself in new ways and investing in the communities, you know, like a contractor joining an organization like yours and following your content, like that's a huge step, right? And those little things add up in terms of who you surround yourself with and the events you go to and how much you push. In one of our early board meetings, one of our advisors, he basically said like, how will you be the leader that the company needs next year? Right? Like you're doing a good job right now, but where you're presenting a forecast, by the time you get to the end of that forecast, well, how are you going to be the executive that leads that size company? Right? And that's a forcing function that you have to put yourself through every single year. And so 10 years ago, I could never have imagined that I would be, you know, CMO, CRO of the size company that we are at now. I did not have the skill set for that, but I didn't mail it in along the way. I knew that's who I had to become, and that's what I had to push myself to learn to be capable and not let the company outgrow me, right?
It's amazing. Yeah, and I think there's a lot of people out there that feel it. I talk to a lot of our members about it all the time. It's like not only being willing to step up, but also being aware that you need to redefine your role almost every single year, because otherwise you get stuck in last year's role and the year from 2 years ago and the year from 3 years, and then suddenly have four jobs and then nothing goes well. So it's a willingness and I would say an awareness that every year you should have a new job description and you should be preparing for what that role looks like. So it's good. Jonathan, it's good hanging with you. Thanks for coming on. Any other final thoughts? If people want to reach out or find Trainual, anything you want to point people towards?
I mean, they can go to trainual.com. They can learn more about what the product is. You know, oftentimes dollars speak to priorities, right? Make the investment and then you can actually solve the systems and process problem. But no real hard sell. I think it's like, whether it's with Trainual or not, like it's just something that I believe everybody needs to do, because I've seen the other side of it and know what that yield, like it brings you for your business and for your life. So hoping, everybody figures that out. Outside of that, you can connect with me, LinkedIn, Instagram, wherever else. And I'm happy to continue the conversation, but this has been fun, man.
Awesome, dude. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, of course.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our podcast, consider sharing this episode with another contractor that you think needs to hear it.